This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 141 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. First off, apologies for being out almost a week here. I had a little bit of dental surgery, so I could barely talk. I could barely open my mouth, and that would not have worked for a week's worth of shows. But we came back on Sunday night doing a series preview for the Cardinals series. Had my guys Keith and Keyshawn from Shea and Sons on there, so shout out to them. Also, shout out and thanks to last episode's guest, Laura Albany, sports reporter for Newsday, who covers the Mets and the Yankees. You can follow her on X at Albanese Laura, and you can follow her on Instagram at Laura Writes Stuff. But this week's episode, I got my good friend on here. I'm going to bring him on. Mets trucker, tatted tone from Queens. He's got all the names. There's so many names that I can't keep up, but he is the host of the Mets Trucker podcast, which you need to subscribe to on YouTube, and you follow him on X, Tone from Queens. Tone, what's going on, my friend?
What's going on? And thank you for having me on. It's been a long time coming. We haven't been on the same screen since the Latin Hour, which was
that was a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, it was. And since then, man, there's a lot of Mets baseball that's been played, a lot to talk about.
A lot of baseball has been played, a lot to talk about. And we're going to get right into it because this last, I want to say from Friday till now, kind of been a roller coaster ride for the Mets. They get swept in Tampa Bay and then they come into St. Louis. They take two games from St. Louis. The third game gets rained out. I mean, what do you make of just the back and forth struggle between this team and what they've been doing? It kind of feels like, obviously they're at 500 right now. They're, I think, 18-18. And it kind of just feels like they've been going through the motions here. Offense has been struggling, has been very inconsistent. Pitching has been good. Not great, but it's been good. Bullpen has been just amazing to start the season.
Yeah, definitely. So I have two things to take away from this sputtering start, this back and forth spot. The first thing is that this team is still trying to find its identity. It's still trying to find its leggings. And they're not bad. They are not a bad team. This is a team that's going to compete. Second thought, although that could have been too, but second thought is that they're going to figure it out. It all is going to get figured out eventually. And when it does, this team is going to shock a lot of people.
And look, the Mets are dealing with injuries to the rotation, obviously with Kodai Senga, Tyler McGill getting ready to come back. The bullpen has had some injuries. You got Drew Smith out. You got Brooks Raley out. But somehow, some way, they've been able to, you know, kind of, I don't want to say coast, but kind of just stay afloat and you know, keep themselves at 500. Like I said, a lot of thanks of that goes to the bullpen. The rotation has been good, hasn't been great, but we got to see Christian Scott this weekend make his debut. He's going to make the home debut on Saturday, which I will be at to see him face off against the Braves. But in his major league debut, 6 2/3 innings pitched, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. Got to talk about the confidence this kid had coming into this game, into his first start of the season. We saw him struggle out the gate, gave up 3 hits right away, gave up a run. But after that, man, pretty much shut down, lockdown start. You could just see him oozing the confidence as he's coming off the mound inning after inning. And the best part to me was that he kept his pitch count low. I mean, it was nice to see a pitcher go into the sixth and try to make it into the seventh inning and with a low pitch count. So I really enjoyed that start from him. The Mets didn't win. They couldn't hit that day, but it was just nice to see what he was able to accomplish in that game. And he was pretty much as advertised.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And I think the positive I take away from that game was that first inning, being able to come away with as little damage as possible, because they try to jump all over. And I know people can say, well, he has to show it again, because he does, like any rookie. And I know there's no book out on him. But at the same time, he had the second highest strikeout rate in all of minor league baseball, if I'm not mistaken, percentage strikeout rate. So when it comes to that, like everything that he advertised in AAA, he showed us in that game against the Rays. He got us some big situations. That strikeout against Rosarena was huge. And like you said, he oozed confidence. And my favorite stat, I love throwing the FIP stat, which we're going to end up I'm going to mention a million times probably in this episode. Fielding independent pitching was at a 1.79 for that game. A 1.79, which means he did a lot of it himself. He did a lot of it himself. He didn't need spectacular plays behind him to make things happen. And that was a really bright spot. The sweep looked beautiful. His hard stuff looked beautiful. A lot of confidence. Although we got a Johan Santana / Jacob DeGrom outing, it is what it is. But I'm here for Saturday. Can't wait.
Yeah, and you know, he did go up against a lineup that has not been doing well. This is a whole different lineup he's going to go against Saturday. That Atlanta Braves, that's a tough group of you know, really good all-star type players. What is he going to need to do to kind of, I guess, repeat what we saw from him against Tampa?
I think he has to trust his stuff. At the end of the day, the way to repeat what you do is to trust your stuff and pitch into the zone. Try to get guys out. Show that your stuff is really your stuff. And don't nibble around the corners. Don't sit here and try to like, I don't really want to attack this guy. No, we have to see what you're made of. You have to see what you're made of. And what better game early in the season against the Atlanta Braves at home than to say, you know what? I'm going to give my best stuff. You have one of the better lineups in baseball. And it's mano a mano. And that's how you know. I think this Saturday, I know it's early in his career, but I think this Saturday is going to show us exactly the type of pitcher Christian Scott is going
to
be.
We talk about the confidence and the ability to battle back like he did in the first inning. There's another starting pitcher that kind of oozes that as well. He won game two against the Cardinals on Tuesday, Jose Buto. You know, we talked about this on Twitter, kind of becoming that fixture in the rotation, not only I think for this year, but I'm thinking that he's gained his spot eventually and will be a part of this rotation as well next year. I don't like to look too much into the future, but if you look at free agency and what the Mets need to get, if Jose Buto continues to pitch the way he has, it really does help in not having to, you know, spend a lot of money on what is going to be a top heavy free agent starting pitching class. Maybe they can go after and get one, you know, ace type level pitcher. But if you could fill out the rotation, Christian Scott, Kodai Senga, Jose Buto, and another starter, I think that goes a long way. Jose Buto against the Cardinals, 5 innings pitched, 5 hits, gave up 3 earned runs early, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. But man, you know, every time he has to fight through some type of adversity, this guy comes back, you know, inning later, and he just starts to set people down. He becomes more confident as the games go on. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the one thing I love about Buto is the battle that he has. And it's the battle to get out of those jams. And once he gets out, I don't know if it's jitters that starts off early, but once he gets off those first couple hits or that first jam, like he's smooth sailing for the game. You know what I mean? I do have his game log here if you don't mind real quick.
Yeah, of course.
So he's made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 starts. Obviously, we know he's a 1-2. Unfortunately, his first two games, he went 6 innings. The next two games, he went under 5, well, 5.2 and 4.1. And Chicago, he went 6. St. Louis, he went 5, you know. And his FIP outside of both St. Louis games was the only time his FIP was over 4. Outside of that, it's been sub 2.6. One game was 3.6, 3.6. But he's a guy that battles. He's a guy that he doesn't, I think the issue is he doesn't have to put out pitch. So he's trying to figure out how to like not get burned by it. But when he's like kind of gives that up, when he's like, you know what, let me just try and throw a strike, like he gets outs, you know. And I think he's a perfect guy for, we're going to 6-man rotation, a number 6 guy. He's the perfect guy to be a number 6 guy. I see him as, I said it in the preseason, I see him as our version of Trevor Williams from a couple years ago. And if you look at what Trevor Williams is doing with the Nationals now, he's looking pretty good. But I do think he has that potential to be that 6-man/ long reliever where he'll give you quality outs. And I'm excited to see him continue to grow. And I think he earned his spot for the rest of the year. He has to do something, it has to be a catastrophe for him to not be in this rotation anymore. And I think it would be an injustice to him to send it back down at any point in the season, even when Kodai comes back.
Yeah, there are starters in this current rotation who have pitched worse. I mean, you see what Quintana did on Friday against Tampa. You've seen with a Hauser's done all season, and he's gotten himself demoted into the bullpen and will probably take on that long man role eventually. But, you know, with Buto, like you mentioned, 1-2, it's surprising that it's his first win of the season. He's had better starts than what happened in St. Louis. It's just nice to see, you know, the Mets offense finally, you know, back him up. Even when he didn't have his best stuff, they were able to back him up, score some runs, and get him that first win of the season. And his best start of the season to me was that game, that Doc Gooden retirement game when he struck out nine guys. I mean, he was almost untouchable that day. And I hope it continues. I hope he continues to be a part of this rotation, which I think he will once they go to the sixth man. He deserves that. He's got 34 strikeouts and 33 innings pitched. I'd like to see that go up a little bit from him. But, you know, he's getting the outs, which is most important. And he's working some quick innings in that, you know, fourth, fifth, and sixth inning. He's working a little bit quicker and getting some quality outs, which has allowed him to go deeper into games.
Yeah, and his, I just also want to give up his earned runs for each game, six games. So just 1-6. 1-0-2-4-1-3. That's a quality pitcher. That's a quality pitcher. He had one, like, the first St. Louis game was a shaky one, and the last one too, but that's a quality outing. The guy's giving up less than two runs a game. You know, four out of six games, he's giving up less than two runs a game. What more can you ask for from a starting pitcher? I get it's only five innings, but this whole rotation's been giving you five innings, it feels like, and that's becoming the game of baseball. It's not just a Mets problem. This is a baseball problem, you know, with the pitch clock, with the higher velo, when so much more information, where it's just guys just kind of stop throwing strikes because guys are just trying to make their finest work because not everybody has that put out stuff. So like I said, I think Buto's going to continue to improve. I'm glad that he's getting a legit shot to stay in this rotation. He proved towards the end of last year he was not too shabby, and he was coming on, and whoever's in his corner and got him to pitch this way, it's quality start after quality start, and I understand the innings is a problem, but we have an innings problem throughout this whole staff. So I take what I could get. Give me five shutdown innings, and let this lights out bullpen take the rest.
Yeah, and the only other outing where he didn't go five was against the Dodgers, and he was still able to hold them. I think he only pitched four innings, but he was still able to hold them so that the Mets could get the victory in that game. Yeah, Buto, like you said, should be able to stay in this rotation. We talk about the opportunity to move to a six-man rotation. I don't know if this will be something that happens Major League Baseball-wide because of what we're seeing, the transition of these pitchers. Like you said, not being able to go more than five innings in a game, the taxing on the bullpen. I don't know if they add more spots on the full team roster eventually. But right now, the Mets are getting set to go to a six-man rotation with Kodai Senga getting ready to come back. He's starting to get into bullpen sessions. Tyler McGill, his last rehab start, four perfect innings in Syracuse. He's probably on his way back to the rotation. You know, if all are healthy, how are you setting up this rotation?
I think it depends on what Quintana does, to be honest with you. I feel like Manaea has shown enough, and I know he has a player option for the following year. I think he's shown enough to maintain in this rotation. Severino's shown enough to maintain in this rotation, and I don't think they're gonna. That was one of the first signings in the offseason, you know, so I don't believe he's going anywhere anyway. So I think Quintana and Hauser, the two odd men out. I think it also depends to see how Scott continues. If he continues what he did against Tampa, it makes it hard to do anything otherwise, you know. But I do think Hauser is the odd man out in this situation. So if McGill comes back, it's going to be Hauser against the DFA. You know what I mean? And we'll see how that goes. But when Peterson comes back and Kodai come back, that's where all the fun starts. But it's a good problem to have, in my opinion. So in a perfect world, if everybody's pitching perfectly fine, for me, I would say Kodai, Severino, Manaea as four, Scott and Buto. And I have McGill at the long man spot. I have McGill and Peterson battle out for that long man spot, because I know they have tried in the past to get Peterson to be a reliever. And it depends on how long Brooks Raley is out, where maybe he could come up and be a lefty reliever who could last a little bit longer. But I just don't see them moving anybody outside of Quintana and Hauser from this rotation. And I think Quintana can end up getting flipped for somebody, because he is still a quality pitcher, but he's just so up and down, and they could get what they could get for him to make room. I think that's what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, I think that's the right move to eventually trade and move on from Quintana. You know, he's been pretty much consistent outside of this last start where he gave up eight runs. You know, you get, you know, two or three runs from him, but something just seems to, even though he's giving you those quality starts, he's kind of, you know, flirting with disaster in his games. Like outside of that one really good game, which I think was against St. Louis, where he pitched the eight innings. Or was that against the Cubs?
Yeah, I think it was St. Louis.
I think it was after Severino.
It was right after Severino.
So either St. Louis or the Cubs. It was in that homestand, that previous homestand, where he gave us the eight innings. And, you know, outside of that, when you watch him pitch, he kind of flirts with disaster almost, where, you know, he'll put some guys on. He'll get you a little bit nervous, get you a little bit worried. He'll eventually get out of it. But he's using up so much pitches that he's not able to go deeper into games to give us, you know, the six innings that we need from him. So, yeah, I do think that Quintana will be one of those guys that gets traded. Hauser put himself, he dug his own grave to start this season. And with McGill and David Peterson, who not only could start but also be put in the bullpen, especially like you said, with the way Brooks Raley and how long he could possibly be out, that David Peterson could be that lefty out of the bullpen, has some experience doing that. Those are definitely the guys that I want to see. Just the way you said it, I think it's perfectly done that way. And I feel like Kodai Senga, probably for the entire season, this will be a six man, because if you remember, he only really got three starts on 5 days rest all season last year, and that was towards the end of September. But I'm liking this depth that has been created by the Mets, by Stearns, by this rotation. And it's just nice. We didn't have it last year. We thought we were having it last year. It didn't end up being like that. At least here we're getting, you know, the five innings, whereas last year it was you may get three innings, you may get four, you may get two. So I like the depth that the Mets have created with this rotation.
Yeah, and as far as that goes with the rotation, I thought last year we should have been a six man rotation. Severino's a guy who has struggled with health, knock on wood, in the past. We see Manaea. Like I do feel like these guys are benefiting because they're throwing so many pitches that they'll benefit from that extra day of rest. You know, if I'm not mistaken, I think when Scott came up, that gave everybody an extra day of rest, right? He became the six man essentially.
Yep, it put Severino back and everybody.
Yeah, so it's just going to benefit everybody. And this is something that should have happened last year when we had Kodai, Scherzer, and Verlander, but it didn't. And like as many people wanted to clown on what Stearns did with this rotation, the depth that we have, because we haven't even spoken about the minor leaguers. We haven't even spoken about guys, the Vassils and the Tidwells of the world, we were talking about coming up by August, you know, by All-Star break. We're not even talking about that because we're just like, we're overloaded with depth now, which is amazing. Guys got to perform, and McGill did kind of perform, you know, when he was here, and it's about confidence and all that. But I do think we'll see more than we'll eventually start seeing with the six man. We'll start seeing more than five innings pitch. I think we'll start getting to the six and seven. We see it's capable. We see it's there. And the one thing I say about that is I say this all the time is that I think the philosophy this season has been, because there haven't been any pitchers on his staff with put out stuff, that these guys have been nibbling around the corners, have been just trying to be too fine with what they do. Because it happens in every single start. It's not just this one. It's not just Manaea. It's not just Severino. It's one through five. These guys are nibbling around the corners nonstop because they just don't have that put away strikeout pitch. So it's almost like Hefner and company, whoever's putting this out there, just doesn't trust the stuff that they have in their staff. But when they throw the ball over the plate and not worry about being too fine with it and just throwing the pitch that they want to pitch, the location that they want to throw it in, we've seen the results. We've seen the seven innings. We've seen the eight innings. We see what Scott did. We see what Severino did. We see what Quintana did. And that's just a trend that just has to keep on going. And I hope Hefner sees that and realizes that, and I hope the six-man rotation allows that.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned these pitchers nibbling around the plate, leading to a lot of walks. Those walks leading to a lot of stolen bases, and eventually leading to runs, which they definitely have to find a way to nip in the bud. And if making this six-man rotation, helping these starters to, you know, throw more strikes and limit the walks, which I think is that's twofold there. If they can limit the walks, it will limit the need for, you know, throwing runs out at second base, which they have been, I think, the worst in the league at. So they definitely got to find a way to fix that issue as well. I want to move from the rotation into the bullpen. I know you wanted to talk about the bullpen, so let's get into that. You know, I've been thinking about who have been the anchors of this bullpen so far, and two names obviously come to mind. Reed Garrett, 5-0, 0.47 ERA, 32 strikeouts in 19 innings pitched. And the other guy for me has to be Jorge Lopez, 2.00 3.04 ERA, two saves. He only has 15 Ks in 17 and two-thirds innings pitched. But, man, he's getting these guys to get out to contact and making his innings very quick. I mean, these two guys have been just amazing. We've talked about Jorge Lopez kind of being that X factor during the offseason with the hiring of Jose Rosado to the bullpen. He was on Team Puerto Rico. I think he was in, I don't know if he was in Japan or in Korea in the league before
KBO.
That.
He came out the KBO.
KBO. Okay. Yeah. So he was in the KBO, but he was also with Team Puerto Rico in the WBC where Jorge Lopez kind of pitched his best since being with the Orioles and the Twins. But those two guys have really been kind of the anchors of this bullpen leading up to a Adam Ottavino who's been okay and Edwin Diaz who hasn't been 2022 Edwin Diaz.
Yeah. So as far as this goes, the bullpen goes, I said it before in the offseason. We spoke about it, like you said, Jorge Lopez. If we got an ounce of what he gave in Baltimore, we were in good shape. We were in good shape. And the beauty about Jorge Lopez is that he comes in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, or 10th inning. It doesn't matter. But when he comes in, it always seems to be a high leverage situation, you know? And I think to have that, to come in at any inning and not worry about it, has been a godsend to this bullpen, to this team, to this entire staff. We talk about Reed Garrett. Reed Garrett, fun fact, ERA plus is 8.38, which is insane. The average ERA plus, you'll look like on the higher end is around in the 200s. But in 1986, it's at 8.38, like you said, 0.47 ERA. So these two guys have been the workhorse, absolute workhorses of what we've been seeing. And, you know, and it takes pressure off the Adam. I think what Jorge Lopez and Reed Garrett has done is taking pressure off of Adam Ottavino. I think it all translates and it all correlates to each other because at the end of the day, last year, Ottavino was thrown in a lot of spots he shouldn't have been thrown into because he was the only guy. It was him and Brooks Raley. And the one thing I always said about Ottavino was he's a guy that you can't put the whole world on his back. You know what I mean? He's a guy that he has to know, you know, you got to have guys around him. Like he's not it. He's not that person. And I think he's been a lot allowed to breathe easier because he knows that the game, although we've lost because of him, but the guy has a 0.9 something whip. You know what I mean? So he's still doing a great job for what it's worth at age 38 season. But outside of that, who knew we were talking about we'd be missing Drew Smith, first off? I just want to throw that out there as well. Like, I don't think none of us thought that Drew Smith getting hurt, we'd be like, damn, we lost Drew Smith. Like, that's crazy. But just to roll off, Edwin Diaz, although Edwin Diaz hasn't looked the best, he does have a 0.818 whip. So 0.82 if you round up. So Edwin Diaz, he's still recovering. His velo isn't exactly there, and he doesn't trust his velo. And I think we saw that in the Tampa game. 3-2, two outs. He just went to the well one too many times because maybe that day, who's to say that his knee wasn't feeling 100% and he knew he couldn't get the push off that he wanted to get the push off on or the land that he wanted to get it to get that velo up. So he trusted one thing and one thing only, which was his slider. And it worked for two batters. It just didn't work for Rosarena at 3-2 with two outs. You know what I mean? So,
and that ball barely went out. Let's be honest. Like, barely. That did not look like it was going to be a home run until it was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, of course. And so like, I think Jake Diekman, I'm not his biggest fan of watching him, but he's doing his thing. It feels like he's never doing good, but then when you look at his numbers, he's like, he's not too shabby, you know what I mean? But outside of that, it's been good. Sean Rifoli's looked all right coming back up, although he does have some control issues as well, which has plagued him his entire career, which hasn't really changed. But then we come with that DFA part of the bullpen, which has been interesting. From Tonkin, Sosa is now up here. We just got back Johan Ramirez. We're optioning guys. So essentially a little bit of what Epler did last year. But
outside of Tonkin being awful in his appearances, all those DFA guys that they've been bringing up and bringing down have been okay, right? Like Cole Sussler had a really good outing last outing. He's been okay. Danny Young looked okay. I think Josh Walker, they've had their bad outings, but they've come through in some spots that you need to. And to go back to Edwin Diaz real quick, I do like the fact that Carlos Mendoza is really growing on me, man. Ever since spring, when I first heard his in-game press conferences, he has been growing on me. I know that the 0-5 start kind of threw everything off a little bit, but he's kind of gained control and gotten these guys back to, you know, playing and being at that major league level where I thought, you know, first five games, it was like extended spring training almost. But the fact that Mendy went to Edwin Diaz on Monday after that, blowing that game against the Rays, and he comes back and throws 98 and gets strikeouts and gets a nice, quick, easy save. I think that's a huge confidence boost for Edwin Diaz moving forward. forward, and it was very well needed.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, though, the outing before that Rays game, wasn't it lost? And he said it was his fault, but it wasn't his fault. I forgot what game it was. There was a game. I think there was a couple errors in that game, too. But I'm not mistaken. There was a bad game that he took a lot of blame for, but the offense didn't show up. It might have been a Chris Scott game. I don't remember. But, you know, so it wasn't the greatest of series for him against the Rays. So to have that to come back against the Cardinals, like you said, must need. As far as Mendoza goes, he's been absolute godsend to this team. I think he's injected life. These guys look like themselves when they're happy. They're allowed to go around, celebrate, feel good. He's not afraid to say that guys aren't good to the public. Like, oh, I think the quote was about you think he did better with his sinker? He's like, no, like he doesn't have anything with his sinker, you know. So it's the honesty and it's the truth that he has. I think for us as fans, and I think to his players, because I think that reflects of the type of guy he is. Like, he's a transparent guy, and he says what's on his mind and how he wants to say it. But this team looks rejuvenated under him, and I think that's part of the reason why they're fighting the way they're fighting. It's because of him, you know, and that's a testament to who Mendy is as a manager. And not to forget the Quintana game when he was going to take him out and came back in, and he's like, you know what, I'm going to leave you out there, I trust you. That just goes to show you just who Mendoza is as a manager. And I think for this team at this moment, probably the best manager they could have found. Shout out to Stearns.
Yeah, great job by Stearns. Admirable job by Mendy so far. And, you know, I was thinking about, we were talking about Jorge Lopez and Adam Ottavino. I think that those two guys are going to be switching roles this season, whereas Jorge Lopez, like you said, is going to be getting a lot more of those high leverage opportunities, especially if Edwin Diaz maybe has pitched multiple games, not available. Jorge Lopez has proven, even in the past, even in his time in Baltimore, that he can close game. He seems a more reliable closer than Adam Ottavino would be. Because like you said, we saw last year, he had a hard time with those spots, had a hard time getting that save against the Cardinals on Tuesday. So, you know, I would eventually, as this season continues, I don't know if maybe Ottavino gets traded or anything like that, or how they handle it. But I do eventually see them switching that role, and you'll see more of Jorge Lopez in the later half of the innings, whereas Adam Ottavino will probably get more of the, you know, sixth, seventh, and earlier innings like that.
Yeah, and that would make sense to do. Last year, Adam Ottavino had a career high in saves with the Mets, and I think the other year he's had more than 10 saves in his career was with Boston. And if you look at both of those years, his ERA was a little higher, his walks were a little higher. It's just the high leverage situation isn't who he is, not since Colorado. But with that said, I do think Jorge Lopez has earned that setup man role. I think if you were to tell me that we're going to have a rotation of setup men of Reed Garrett and Jorge Lopez for the rest of the year in the eighth inning, I'm fine with that. I am totally fine with that.
If you're going to tell me
that Edwin Diaz needs a blow and Jorge Lopez is going to be Reed Garrett and Jorge Lopez, I am 100% fine with that as well. And I think that's the beauty of this team, is that we finally have a bullpen. And that's been one of the most important parts in the recent game of baseball, is what can your bullpen do for you? Can your bullpen keep you in a game? Does your bullpen take you out of a game? Can your bullpen hold the lead? And in recent memory, the Mets bullpen hasn't been able to do anything. So I think the last time we had a bona fide closer or for that season was Jerry's Familia. Bullpen seemed to hold through with it, but also the starters that those years went really deep in the game. So it didn't take a lot of the bullpen. But outside of that, it's been a long time. It's been a long time, and I hope these guys don't break down. I hope these guys don't get tired, but they're pitching because they're healthy. They're pitching because they're good. And let's not forget, Jorge Lopez used to be a starter. So I see Jorge Lopez as our modern day Pedro Feliciano. For those who don't remember, Pedro Feliciano pitched, felt like, every single game.
Perpetual Pedro.
And that's what he did. And Jorge Lopez is kind of settling into that, where he'll pitch every single game, no matter what, no matter how many pitches he throws the day before. And it's a beautiful thing to have.
You know, I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop when it comes to Reed Garrett. He's been that journeyman type pitcher, and to figure it all out. And every time I see him, he just gets better and better. Tuesday, he had such a filthy put away pitch to end the inning. And I'm just happy for Reed Garrett. Like you said, like you, I hope it continues, especially with this entire bullpen. And they have the makings of something special if they can continue to play that the way they they are. And it would be very helpful too, once this rotation goes to six man, if these guys start giving them six innings, help lighten the load there for the bullpen. Because we saw by the time this bullpen last year got into May and June, it was dead to rights and just completely awful. So hopefully that doesn't happen again. I don't think it will. I think we have more seasoned vets, more younger arms as well in the rotation and as well in the bullpen to help get them through. Once again, I'm here with my guy, Mets Trucker, Tatted Tone. Follow him on X at Tone from Queens and subscribe to the Mets Trucker podcast on YouTube. Let's get into the lineup. Let's talk about who's hot in this lineup right now. Your guy, you're always talking about him, Francisco Lindor. He's hot in this lineup. Over the last seven games, batting .280, one home run, nine RBIs. Over the last 15 games, four home runs, 14 RBIs. And to your credit too as well, you talked about this a lot. Very big spots for Francisco Lindor, that he's gotten some big hits, some big runs scored, and just so happy for Francisco Lindor, especially after the start he got into, the whole thing with the fans chanting him on, helping him get through, and he's finally like turning this corner.
Yeah, so when it comes to Lindor, I understand everybody's frustration. I get it. So I will say this, when you look at Lindor's best year in Cleveland, I think he had about 38 home runs. Every single year of that year, when you look at it, it's been up and down. It's been hit or miss. His batting average has been above 300. His batting average has been below 250. That's just who he was. That's been his MO since Cleveland. When everybody thought he was a superstar, when everybody thought he was amazing, he's still the same Francisco Lindor that got hot and cold, but did come through in a lot of big spots, which is what he's doing with the Mets. Is he comes through in a lot of big spots, but some Mets fans don't want to acknowledge it because he's not going 4-for-4 every night. You know, we forget that this is a game of baseball. It's one of the hardest sport to play. There's a reason why the average guy has a .250 batting average. He's batting 1-for-4 every single night. There's a reason why guys who bat above 300 are held on a different strategy. You know what I mean? There's a reason why guys who bat 400 are legends for the game. You know, with that said, he's been hot, and his glove has been his glove. His glove hasn't changed. And that's it was against Tampa when they got the hit to short and he jumped throw to home plate to get the guy out, the bases loaded. What shortstop does that? There's not many you can say do that, you know? So yeah, we could talk about the slow start all we want and all that, but at the end of the day, Francisco Lindor is who he is. He is a perpetual slow starter. He warms up, but with the Mets, he kind of tends to stay warm. As opposed to Cleveland, he goes through peaks and valleys. With the Mets, it starts all the way from under the ground and it like a roller coaster and then shoots off, you know? So we're at that moment where it's kind of like going up, like if you're on a cyclone in Coney Island, it's just like steadily going up. And then it levels out. And then, okay, this is the 30-for-30 guy. This is the guy who has 100-plus RBIs. This is, like, he's still the best power-hitting shortstop in baseball, second-best power-hitting shortstop in baseball, depending on how you feel about Corey Seager. And talk about, I know it's a Mets podcast, but even Corey Seager, I know he had a home run the other night, has been struggling as well. So we can't even say he's just – and Corey Seager's getting paid same amount of money, you know? So whether you want to make it about money or whatever the case may be, Lindor is the same guy that he was in Cleveland. He's done everything that's been asked of him. My guy had the runs.
Yes.
Left the game. Had the runs the next day. Came into the game. Went 2-for-3.
And had that game-winning double and extras.
Exactly. And he puts the team on his back. And in Tampa, he did the same thing. He started off with a 2-run bomb to give the Mets the lead in the first inning. For God knows, I don't remember the last time I saw that. And then I know he had the line out when the bases were loaded. Hard hit, shortstop, whatever. But he had another one. There was two men on. He got the single to get on, load the bases for Pete Alonso. So Lindor is going to be good. There are peaks and valleys. That's to be understood. I get, as Mets fans, we get upset. And some people want to get more rational than others, but we have to remember this is baseball, where success is .250 batting average and above. 1-for-4 per night and above is success, or however that equates to. But a 1-for-4 game is considered success. You know, now he's second. I think he's second on the team in homers, or at 8 or something, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's second on the team in homers now. He's climbing up the boards. When you compare all shortstops, he's climbing up the boards with numbers. And that glove is still one of the best gloves in baseball, and he's shown that time and time again. And like I said, I think him being a leader, no matter how bad it's been for him, we've seen him speak to Beatty when Beatty's messed up. We've seen him talk to the pitchers like, yo, y'all gotta throw over, figure it out. We saw the frustration for the first time. I seen him get that mad. But it goes to show you how passionate that man is about baseball. And I'll say this, Francisco Lindor is my shortstop. I hope he's your shortstop too, and every every Mets fan shortstop, but I am so happy to have that man at shortstop. I love his game. You have to understand his game to love his game, because it's been his game his entire career. This year has been nothing different. The man's a superstar.
No, yeah, he's definitely my shortstop. And, you know, going out to Citi Field when they were doing the whole ovation stuff, just trying to pump him up, get him get out of that slump that he was in. I know he felt that from the fans that have been supporting him. And what I admire about him the most is what you mentioned, that the fact that he's slumping offensively, but he never drags that into defense. And you mentioned the play in Tampa, the awareness at that time in the ninth inning or the bottom of the eighth inning to throw home and get that out when we all thought that ball was going into left field. That was just an amazing play that will probably get lost because they lost that game. But it was no part due to him either. So he's been able to keep the defense going. He's been great defensively. And we just hoping that the offense, like you said, continues to steadily climb for him. Another guy on offense that has been kind of turning it around, who was off to a rough start himself, leads the team in RBIs, Brandon Nimmo, batting .320, two home runs, seven RBIs, four walks in his last seven games. In his last 15 games, he's got three home runs, 10 RBIs, 10 walks, but also has 11 strikeouts. What do you make of this kind of turnaround for Brandon Nimmo, where, man, if they could get, I want to say, a legitimate leadoff hitter, I think it's almost time to move him down the lineup in a more RBI setting. I mean, because he leads the team in RBIs and he's a leadoff guy.
Yeah, so Nimmo's on a heater right now. It's insane to see what he's doing. Clutch. That St. Louis homer, clutch. We thought we were dead to rights. Beautiful. And dead center, too. That was some power behind that. We got all of it. The way I would love to see it, give me Marte, Lindor, Nimmo. 1, 2, 3. Or even if you want to say Nimmo, fine, if you want to argue that. But it's clear that Nimmo wants the RBI opportunities. It's clear that Nimmo wants the power. And I think one of the reasons why, because his strikeouts, if I'm not mistaken, are most on the team along with Marte. In the beginning of the season, the slump we saw is because he really wants to be somebody different. He really wants to be the guy who drives the run. He really wants to be the guy who gets the hits, be the power hitter. And yeah, he still has the walks, but it's almost like he's bored of that. You know what I mean? He's just like, yeah, I want a new challenge. I want something different. Like I could walk for days to first base. I could hit singles for days to first base. But you know what? I'm playing left field. I want to hit bombs. Bombs feel good. This team doesn't have bombs. Last year, 24 homers, a whole career high. You know, and he said, I want to hit more homers. And I think it's about time. Hopefully they do it. But like you said, to your credit, that you got to move. He needs the RBI opportunities. And I think if you put Marte always seems to always get on base. And you know, shout out to Marte for the revival. But Lindor doesn't have to worry that much when he has Nimmo behind him as well. You know what I mean? So if you're telling me that now we have Lindor and Nimmo back to back at 2-3, if we get a guy who consistently get on base and put pressure on other teams, there's always an RBI chance within the first three batters. You know, and I think that's a beautiful thing. And I know they try to get that with Pete Alonso moved up to the number three hole, which I thought would have worked, but it hasn't. But yeah, man, they need to move Nimmo back. And I think the middle of the order could be a lot more deadlier, and we can have an extended middle of the order if we somehow have a Lindor, Nimmo, Pete, and JD mixture.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, he hasn't lost a step in center field either. They put him in center field the other day. He made a nice kind of game-saving catch diving for that ball. And you know, I feel like we've seen a lot of elite center field play from Harrison Bader as well. I think he's played very well there, but it is nice to see every so often Brandon Nimmo get back out there, because I think he loves to play center field more than he does left field. He I don't know about you, but to me, he does look a little uncomfortable when, you know, line drives are hit and balls are against the wall. Looks a little uncomfortable trying to gather a ball and throw him back into the infield.
Yeah, I do think that's I also think that just has to do with a new position, you know, because when, if I'm not mistaken, when he first came up, he was playing right field, right? When he first came up, yeah, he was playing right field. And when he moved into the center, it was the same thing. He was really uncomfortable, you know, and it took him a season or two to kind of really adjust to playing center. And granted, the arm never showed up, but the track attacking started to be good. I think that's the same thing we're seeing in left field. But I think with left field, mistakes are allowable. You know what I mean? So it's not as worrisome. You know, although you never want to see a guy make a mistake, but you usually put like your weakest glove out in left field and figure it out from there. But it's been nice. It's been nice. And I think he's going to continue to improve left field. I just think he needs more reps in live game situations. I don't think he got enough in spring, in my opinion. I don't feel like he showed up a lot in spring. So everything right now is just constant reps and you can't simulate an actual game. You know, you could shag fly balls all you want, but nothing simulates actual game, actual situation. So he'll get it though. But it was nice to see that him track that down and dive in center field.
We can't talk about the offense and not talk about this next guy. It kind of represents this entire episode that we've been talking about this team being a roller coaster, and no one has represented that more right now than Pete Alonso. And he's really been on that lower part of the roller coaster right now. He's batting 195, has a 425 slugging percentage, 287 on base percentage. Tuesday night, this is after getting a night off on Monday, which seemed to be needed. He didn't get the whole game off, but he got most of the night off. Tuesday night comes back against St. Louis, 2-for-5, a home run, 3 RBIs, 2 runs. The body language has been off with Pete throughout this, and you know, I guess deservedly so. But are we finally going to get to see this guy turn the corner? I feel like we will. I have not given up on Pete Alonso yet. I know he had that kind of a struggle kind of mid-season last year when he came back to me, which was a little too early from that wrist injury. He went on a deep slump after coming back from that, but then recovered. I think Pete Alonso will recover and will be fine. Do you think it's happening now since we saw how well he did on Tuesday night?
I joke around a lot for whoever follows me on Twitter about Pete not showing up or whatever, but I was one of the ones in the offseason like, give Pete the 10 years, 300. I defended it. I fought people over it. I had pitchforks show up at my front of my house. Like, hey, how could you say something like that? And, you know, it's been hurt. It's been hurtful to see how he's done in the beginning of the season. And at times, it's almost made me think like, man, what if we had Vientos at first and just gave him all those reps? Like, how would that look, you know, in the future? But I'm not here to give up on Pete because Pete is my guy. And to see the hard contact show up the way it has yesterday in the last game has been nice. I just wish it would have showed up in Tampa. But we can't turn back time and we can't see that again. But I think a testament to see if it's back is this Atlanta series. And it's not if he's hitting home runs where we're down. It's not if he's hitting home runs when we're up. Unless it's like to pad to give us an extra, you know, a little bit, which looked really good yesterday. But it's when he doesn't, when it matters the most, you know, and that needs to happen. It's Atlanta. We have Atlanta and Philly back to back. So if Pete Alonso ever had a time to come back and show us that he's here and deserves everything he deserves, this is the series. But I'm going to hold my judgment on that one for now, but fingers crossed that he's back.
I totally hope that he is back. I don't know if I would gave him 300 mil. I mean, I know that you were stuck on the 300 mil. I think that he'll get somewhere between 175, 200. I think that's where his cap is. Good luck to Boris trying to get 300, especially with how he got his other clients' money this past offseason.
Oh, it's been a beautiful thing. Shout out to Montgomery and Snell, who Mets fans were crying for as well. But hey, that's for another day.
Yeah. Before we wrap up here, I want to get into one more player. He's not, you know, one of the more important pieces, but he is for right now, and that's Tomas Nito leading the charge behind the plate, because we got a press conference earlier on before the game got rained out against St. Louis that Mendy was giving credit to Tomas Nito for handling the Mets pitching staff since being called up. And, you know, I thought that was pretty big. I mean, he never did that for Omar Narvaez. And, you know, it just seems to tell me that Tomas Nito, until Francisco Alvarez comes back, Tomas Nito is going to be the guy behind the plate, at least getting most of the games instead of Omar Narvaez. And, you know, the way he's able to frame pitches way better than Narvaez. That was my big complaint with Narvaez, because you would see Francisco Alvarez kind of sometimes steal some strikes away with the way he pitch frames. I didn't see that from Omar Narvaez, and it was frustrating watching some of those games. And at least Tomas Nito, you know, knows a lot of the pitchers in this staff, worked with some of them in the minors, and is able to, you know, call that game. We may not get it offensively from him, but, you know, with JD Martinez now in the lineup, I think less emphasis on the catcher being able to hit until Francisco Alvarez returns.
Yeah, not to mention Nito has gotten a couple nice hits. I think he had a bunt the other day too, but
and a home run.
With that said, people forget that Nito is probably the best defensive catcher that the Mets have in their whole system. He's shown that time and time again. He was better than McCann when McCann was here. His whole time here, he's been the best defensive catcher. And I think we're just reminded of that because people forgot about him because Alvarez was healthy and Alvarez was here. So Nito became an afterthought. But it's nice to see him back. It's nice to see him up and performing. And I do think the stat was 30 out of 52 stolen bases allowed were under Narvaez's watch. I understand that is also a pitcher's problem because they don't hold guys the way they should, which has been spoken about. But it just shows people don't respect the arm of Narvaez. And that hasn't been the same for Nito. I don't have the exact percentage in front of me. I should have pulled it up. But when it comes to Nito, like, guys tend to respect a little bit more. And even when pitchers don't hold, when pitchers aren't holding guys on, Nito still's giving them a shot. You know, when he's throwing, the pop-up time is ridiculous. The blocking that he does has been ridiculous. He is, to me, he's head and shoulders above a defensive catcher than what Narvaez is. So if you want to talk about offense, if you're telling me that Nito and Narvaez are the same guys, but they're going to provide you on offense, I want Nito every single night until Alvarez gets back. And I thought before they bought Narvaez, before they signed him, although nobody expected everybody to get hurt and Alvarez to come up and hold on to the job, that if Alvarez was ever going to learn from somebody how to play the defense, play catch from a defensive position, it should have been Nito. It should have been Nito. Like, I get Narvaez as a countryman, instill confidence in youth. This is Major League Baseball. You have everybody from every walk of life. And even now, you have a Venezuelan manager in Mendy. You know what I mean? So even when Alvarez comes back, I don't see the need for Narvaez. And I feel like it will be another injustice to set Nito back down, because all he's done since he's been here is shown you that, you know what, you may not get offense, but I'm gonna make sure that I play the best defensive catcher that I can, which in reality, that is the MO of the MLB anyway. For the longest time, it's been defensive catcher based. Offense has been a plus. It has been a bonus. And when a catcher gives you offense, a la the Ali Rushmans of the world or the Salvador Perez's when he was in his prime, like, that's why they were seen on another tier, because they had the offense. But the priority of baseball teams was, what was the best defensive catcher I could find? Give me a Yadier Molina. You know what I mean? Give me the Martin Maldonado who caught that staff. He did nothing on offense, but he was a great defensive catcher. You know what I mean? And Nito having this connection and all that is a necessity, and it's such a huge part of the game. It's such a huge part of baseball that no matter how much they try to take the catcher out of baseball with the automated strikes, with taking the signs out and everything's electronic, the catcher's still one of the most important positions. Like you said, pitch framing is important. Pitch framing is still a thing. And when they bring the challenge in to the MLB, it's only one challenge, I think, per at bat anyway. And if you win, you get another one. But if you lose, that's it. You know, so you still have to have the art of framing. You still have to make them guess. You still have to make them think. Nito has been a pleasant surprise. I've always been a big Nito supporter. Like, that's, I always call him Nito King for the Pokemon lovers out there. So anytime he does something good, I applaud him. I applaud him because I feel like, because his bat isn't good, that he gets a lot of flack. When that's not his game, that's not a lot of catcher's game. He doesn't get paid to be a big bat. He doesn't get paid to be Mike Piazza. He always got paid to be a defensive catcher, a late inning replacement. You know, a guy who you won't miss a step when guys last year on the staff were preferring to throw the needle. You know what I mean? Because they love the way he caught the game and all that. So shout out to Nito, man. It's been awesome. Hopefully he sticks. And hopefully, as Puerto Ricans would say, we can send our wives off to Carajo land once it's all over.
Hopefully Stearns can work his magic and get some, you know, cash considerations or something like he's done with a couple of other these guys. And you know, not only, I wouldn't say not DFA him, but get some kind of stuff back for him in a trade. Look, you know, Nito is better offensively than a lot of backup catchers around the league. I mean, he's shown it. I mean, you could even go back to when we had the bench mob and, you know, he almost stole the catching job away from James McCann. McCann. And if it wasn't for having to pay James McCann that ridiculous contract, Tomas Nito would have been starting. There had been a time where there was a decent balance between them playing each other, and then they kind of took it away from McCann. They took it away from Nito, and once they started giving more to McCann, it was just a mess and a mistake.
That's what we're seeing now with Narvaez. Narvaez is getting a 7.5, Nito's making 1 point something, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So it's about, well, we're spending 7.5 on this catcher, we have to get him to play. And that shouldn't be. At the end of the day, right now it's a necessity, but you got to cut your losses at some point. We've seen this Mets team cut their losses last year. We've seen them DFA guys nonstop this year. And even if you don't DFA, I'm like, Narvaez doesn't deserve playing time over Nito at all. If you want this team to win, Nito's the guy you have until Alvarez comes back.
Yep. And even when Alvarez comes back, you can have Nito as the backup catcher, as it should be. Tone, this has been a lot of fun for me, man. It's always great talking with you, whether on Twitter, like we did the Latin Hour, here on this podcast. I know I promoted your stuff out, but you do me a favor. You do it this time. Promote out how everyone can, you know, interact with you, talk about your podcast, and let everyone know how to, you know, get in touch.
Yeah. So real quick, if you just give me 1 sec before that, I just want to say, for all you Mets fans out there, don't know how to feel about this season, feel positive. I miss the positive. I'm going to tell you why you feel positive. The Mets don't call up Christian Scott unless they were trying to win. The Mets don't send Hauser to the bullpen because that was a trade piece unless they were trying to win. The Mets don't sit here and sign JD Martinez unless they're trying to win. The Mets don't DFA Zach Short, Michael Tonkin, and all these guys unless they weren't trying to win. You know what I mean? Like, the Mets are showing you that they want to compete. The Mets are showing you that they know that a wild card is in their spot. We know that NL East is gone. That is a afterthought. That's a Philly Atlanta race. It is what it is. I think we're like eight back. Unless we want a miracle run, is what it is. But I think when it comes to the wild card, we're about like half a game out, or we might be in the third wild card. I'm not mistaken. Be positive, because the Mets have shown you and given you reason to be positive. They're telling you that we want to make the playoffs. We know we can make the playoffs with this squad. And it's about the core hitting at the right time, which they're starting to do. The bullpen we've seen, and it's the starters that just got to come around. I'm telling you guys, and I say this all the time, they're going to hold strong. Trade deadline, they're going to shock the world with some of the stuff they might do. But with that said, you can catch me on Twitter, X, Tone from Queens. I know I changed it a million times. It is what it is. I get bored. My podcast is Mets Trucker Podcast. I do it semi-regularly. I don't do it often because we have these wonderful guys like Subway to Shea, Till Mets Do His Part, Shea and Sons, where these guys are putting nonstop content. But, you know, I just don't want to step in that lane and talk about the same stuff. So I think Once in a Blue is good. And then I get to come on these lovely shows and you guys say, oh, shit, look, Mets Trucker Podcast. That's awesome. But with that said, I appreciate all the love and support. And it's been great. Everybody else who ends up watching this, please. I only got 44 subscribers to my channel. If I could get like 5 more, I think my life would be complete. You know what I mean? But with that said, Mets Trucker Podcast, Tom from Queens. Let's go, Mets. Shout out to you, Wayne.
Yeah, let's get you up to what is it, 50 subscribers? You're 45 right now. Let's get Mets Trucker Podcast up to 50 subscribers, even more. Let's just keep it going. And you got great stuff. You got great thoughts on the game and on this team. And I, like I said, I always like chatting with you. I appreciate you. And I thank you for coming on this show, Tone.
Appreciate you. You too.
All right, man. That's going to wrap up Subway to Shea Podcast here. You can follow me on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen and subscribe to the Subway to Shea Podcast on Apple and Spotify. Watch and subscribe on YouTube. You can catch my series previews on there live. You'll catch clips from this show today on this podcast. You'll catch them on there as well. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe and follow button, leave reviews. That only helps, you know, with the algorithm and helps me out. But I can't thank you enough for tuning in and for helping this podcast grow each and every week. It's not a community without all of us together. So I appreciate all the love. For Anthony Rivera, this has been the Subway to Shea Podcast. And always remember, let's go Mets. We'll